And welcome back to WMUCSports.com, where we have Kevin Van Valkenburg, formerly of the Baltimore Sun and currently now of ESPN.com and ESPN, the magazine. Kevin, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Okay, and just first question here. You recently came on board with ESPN.com and ESPN, the magazine, and you've been with the Baltimore Sun for quite some time. And I guess, why now go to ESPN.com, and how did this opportunity arise for you?
Oh, tough question right off the bat, huh? I've been with the Sun for 11 years, I've done a lot of kind of great stuff there in terms of getting to have opportunities to cover the Olympics a couple times and go to as far away as Australia on the time. And I've covered a lot of Ravens games. And, I've always really liked to do long-form features. And ESPN is a place that is really open to doing that, has money to do it. And they had shown some interest in me for a little bit, and we finally came to an agreement where it would work it out. And so I'm really kind of excited to be joining their team with stuff. There's a lot of really smart, really talented people who work at the magazine and at .com, and really looking forward to getting the opportunity to tell some stories that way.
Yeah, certainly. The long-form feature stories, is that the only thing they'll have you doing at ESPN, or just a general column as well?
I don't think it'll be any general column. It'll just be kind of magazine stories and maybe some sort of shorter stuff for the .com. It's still kind of all planned out. I'll have to try to win them over a little bit and see if I can convince them to let me do some five things to learn about the whomever. We'll see kind of how it goes. You know, I think you've got to sort of prove yourself once you get in the door, and then that creates more opportunities down the line.
So, switching to Ravens football right now, one of the last things you did at the Sun was a piece about Joe Flacco when he was getting a lot of flack in the national media. What was the thing that spurred you to write that column, and what was the kind of response you got from that column, and how do you feel about Flacco now after the AFC title game?
Yeah, I mean, I've been pretty, I wouldn't say critical of Joe, but I've been kind of, I feel like, one of the voices in the middle of the road. And Luke and I have sort of talked about this on Twitter a few times where, you know, the knee-jerk response for Flacco was always that he's a really great quarterback or that he's terrible. And I've always sort of felt like that the more honest answer was that he was kind of in the middle somewhere, that he was a good quarterback, but not necessarily a great one. But after the Houston game, the playoff game, his numbers weren't particularly great, and the offense was sort of underwhelming, but they won the game. And everyone was so kind of critical of him, and I felt like we weren't really using all the evidence to make that analysis. I really felt like for the first time that he was just getting blatantly or barely sort of bashed as a guy who was going to hold back the Ravens. And I sort of felt like, and I said so in the column, like, it sort of felt like somebody was picking on my little brother. It was kind of like, you know, I can do this because I see you all the time and I know, you know, the nuance of it. But to watch people just sort of, you know, tee him up when they don't really know what they're talking about, saying that he's terrible and he's what's holding back the Ravens, I thought it was sort of silly. And so I just sort of decided to pin it as like, you know, this is kind of like, you know, use just the construct of writing an open letter to him and being like, hey, I know what you're going through. And here's why, and all the reasons why I think we should appreciate you, and sort of, you know, take a little bit of a contrarian's point of view to the whole thing, but also something I thought would be written in a way that people who would follow the Ravens all year would understand and would appreciate. And to be honest, the response was pretty overwhelmingly positive. Rich Eisen, who's a friend of a friend, read the thing and sent the link out on Twitter to his, 300,000 followers, and and it sort of went all around the blogosphere then, because it was like, here's a smart reason fake sticking up for Joe Flacco. And so I just got, you know, tons and tons of emails and tweets and stuff from people saying, you know, thanks for saying how we felt, and thanks for, you know, putting it in a different way. And then when he went out and played really well at the NFC Championship game, it made me look kind of smart, because I had proof that you're a lot better than people would be credit for. And to be honest, he played so well in that game, you know, I thought that just to play like that in that moment with that much poise proved to me a lot that he's going to be, I think, just fine. You know, I don't know that he'll ever be great, but that's, you don't have to be great. You know, he was darn great enough to get him to the Super Bowl, and Lee Evans happened to drop that pass. So, you know, I think that just shows you how fine the line is between, you know, the way that sort of your reputation is sort of cast, and one guy happens to drop a little pass, and he holds on to it, you're a quarterback who has a really good chance to win the Super Bowl. So now you're going to face a whole other series of questions, and you're, you know, have to, what's it going to be like with a new new quarterback coach and all that jazz. So it's a fascinating thing about sports is how thin the margin of error is.
Yeah, one of the things with the coverage of Flacco nationally that had me thinking about, like, why do you think the NFL coverage has become so quarterback-centric? And it seems like it's become that, especially in the last few years. And, you know, how do you feel about that?
I mean, I think the explosion of fantasy football has a lot to do with it. You know, let's be honest, there's a lot of people out there who play fantasy football who don't really understand the nuances of football, who don't really kind of, I guess, realize that, you know, there's a reason that Matt Stafford puts up huge numbers, which is that the Lions throw 60 times a game and he plays in a wide open offense, and he can throw jump balls to Calvin Johnson, who will bail him out of, you know, terrible plays. So, you know, I think that the more and more popular fantasy football gets, the more and more people kind of obsess over, you know, who am I going to pick, you know, in my fantasy draft? And these quarterbacks are good, and these quarterbacks are not. And the league is so geared towards, you know, passing now that the rules have changed so much that the league wants, you know, to have guys throwing the ball up and down the field, whether it's not being able to brush a guy after 5 yards or not being able to hit a quarterback, you know, from anywhere between the, you know, the thighs to their chest. And, you know, that just comes to promote the game. That makes quarterbacks look better and better and better. And more people focus solely on that aspect of the game because it's easy to understand. Like, look, this quarterback looks cool. He's throwing the ball a lot. And so you can have a quarterback who does his job in a lot of respects, like Flacco, but isn't going to be a particularly sexy, you know, pick fantasy-wise, or going to look pretty all the time. And, you know, he's a good quarterback for a team in the AFC North. But I'm sort of the belief that Aaron Rodgers is the best quarterback in football, but I might take, you know, Ben Roethlisberger second behind him, because I think the style that the Steelers play and what Ben Roethlisberger is able to do for you, you know, he's as good as anybody. And he just doesn't have the kind of monster stats that some of the other guys put up. But you know what? So when year in and year out, in the cold and the rain in Pittsburgh, I would rather have Ben Roethlisberger than I would have Drew Brees. And that's just something that a lot of people, I think, have a hard time kind of grasping. And, you know, Flacco is a lot closer to Roethlisberger than he is to Brees.
Yeah, those are really good points, because, you know, you think about fantasy, and most people, they use that to analyze quarterbacks, and it's not all about the numbers, because you're right. You know, Joe Flacco does not have Calvin Johnson, and he doesn't have Greg Jennings or Jimmy Graham to throw to, but he does just fine. I mean, he's been a really good quarterback for what the Ravens need with the strong defense and the strong running game that they have already.
Yeah, and, you know, the expectations for him are a little bit different. I mean, he's asked to essentially not screw things up. And when you only get 21, 22 passes a game, suddenly if you miss on 5 of those, you know, it's like there's a weight to every throw. It's like, you better not screw this up, because, you know, that's not our style. We should be giving the ball to Ray Rice more. We should, you know, be letting our defense control the game. And so, like, if Flacco were allowed to throw it 60 times a game, you know, and he had good receivers, he could make more mistakes and he could make up for those. And it's hard to kind of switch back and forth between the goals. You know, the Ravens tried to open it up midway through the year and it just wasn't working. Because Flacco's accuracy was off, you know, some of the wide receivers, you know, just weren't playing particularly well, whether it's, you know, age or injury or whatever. So I don't know that what Joe Flacco would look like in an offense like Green Bay's. But I just think that, you know, it's a tough thing to kind of compare straight up across in terms of who's, you know, what should be expected of him and what, you know, he contributes to your team.
Yeah, I thought you brought up really good points there. And one of the things that I've been thinking about recently is, you know, is one of the reasons that the Ravens don't really throw the ball 50, 60 times a game very much. I think they've only done it a few times. They only did it a few times this season. It's kind of just the organizational philosophy from top to bottom that kind of might stem from Ozzie Newsome in some ways. And you look at how, like, the Ravens direct their salary cap. It's mostly towards the defense. Kind of the part of the reason that the Ravens do that is just an overall organizational philosophy. And if so, do you think they have to shift that this offseason and maybe in future seasons as well?
You know, I think with the way the game is changing and the way that obviously Ed Reed and Ray Lewis are getting older, that it's going to present some real challenges for the Ravens and for Ozzie in particular, because I think it's clear over, you know, this 10-year period, 11-year period that he's had a, you know, a run of success, that he prefers a more sort of old school, you know, sort of conservative style, and has, you know, hired coaches and essentially drafted players who will kind of help, you know, fit into that style. And, you know, I think they've tried to sort of break out of that a little bit, but all the hires that they've ever made have never really been kind of like the, you know, big wide open pile of stuff. So, you know, I do think that with a lot of the money that they are going to have to commit to Flacco and to Rice, like, they're probably going to have to sort of do some of that. Because if you tie that much money up in those offensive guys, you know, you're not going to be able to tie up as much money on the defensive side. And so you're going to need to sort of get your value out of that and win more games, you know, 31-28 than 21-14.
We're talking with Kevin Van Valkenburg now of ESPN.com and ESPN the magazine. And Kevin, is the day and age now in your mind? You just said the Ravens may have to win some more higher scoring games. Is the day and age for almost every team, you know, one where you have to almost, you don't have to outscore them per se, but are the defensive minded teams that are going to the Super Bowl every year, are those kind of days gone from the NFL?
I don't think that they're gone. I think that the league will, you know, eventually the defenses will try to figure out a way to kind of catch up a little bit. You know, I mean, I think that the Giants obviously play pretty good defense, even though they didn't play it in the regular season. They're playing pretty good defense now. And the Ravens, you know, if Lee Evans could catch, really should be in the Super Bowl. And they're certainly a team that has, you know, leans heavily on their defense. So it's not to say, like, defenses are extinct. It's just sort of, it becomes a little bit harder when you got teams throwing the ball all over the field all year, and those teams are the teams that end up with home field advantage in the playoffs, and you're just statistically more likely to end up, you know, winning those playoff games. I mean, some of this was a little bit of an anomaly in the way that it kind of unfolded this year. But, you know, San Francisco obviously had a really good year, and they did it, you know, with their defense. And, you know, they're just, some of that is always going to be, that's the sort of, I think, push-pull of football. Is the offense kind of gets ahead, and the defense catches up, and the defense, you know, might make an advance, and then the offense catches up. And, you know, smart people are always constantly trying to think up new and different ways to sort of do different stuff. So I still think that the game is tooled towards offense. But, you know, eventually defensive people are going to figure out some stuff that somebody's going to go, wow, like, how did we, you know, how did we overlook can counteract this.
So one more Ravens question before we move on to the Super Bowl. Has the time come for the Ravens this offseason, assuming Ray Lewis will return, and he says he is, that they have to go up to Ray Lewis and say, Ray, on 3rd and 9, it might be time for you to take that play off, and you might not necessarily be an every down linebacker anymore. Has the time come for the Ravens that they have to do that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's a conversation that, you know, they could have. It's just a tough sort of thing because, you know, obviously the legacy and all that plays some factor in it. And, you know, if he pouts about it, it could sort of affect the chemistry of the rest of the team. But to be honest, like, you know, in that New England game, like, I read somewhere where, you know, someone was sort of saying, like, he was exploited all game on pass coverage. I really didn't think that was the truth. I thought he actually played pretty well in coverage, and it was Danelle Ellaby who was kind of getting, you know, smoked on some of that stuff. I mean, I would sort of, you know, maybe want to sit down with him and say, look at here, these specific plays, like, where you're getting beat. Like, how can we, you know, bring in another safety or bring in another corner, or, you know, tell him, like, look, here's an opportunity for us to get not only Jimmy Smith and Ladarius Webb, but also Terry Williams, who's coming off a really good year on the field, than those downs, and win more games and, you know, extend your career a little bit. And just sort of see what his response would be. I mean, it's let's not pretend that it's not a delicate situation. I mean, if he, you know, there's a lot of people that, you know, value his, I guess, you know, the way he kind of runs part of that locker room. And so he has the, you know, ability, I guess, to kind of poison the whole thing if he would be upset. And I don't know that he would be, but it's clear that he doesn't want to come off the field. And it's clear that he's not always ineffective. He's effective sometimes. I just think that they need to get more pass rush up front, and that will eliminate some of the problems with him sort of not being able to cover for any longer. They're still looking for, you know, another consistent person off the edge or up the middle. And they had some of that in the beginning of the year, and they were able to split some with it, but they kind of lost a little bit of it near the end of the year, and the pass rush kind of went back to struggling a little bit.
Is that something that the Ravens need to upgrade coming up in this offseason? What else is this team looking to do to take that next step towards the Super Bowl?
You know, until we sort of see what their salary cap situation is going to be, and, you know, who they're going to lose in terms of, you know, free agency, like who, you know, are they going to have to replace J.R. Johnson? Are they going to have to replace, you know, Ben Grubbs? Are some of those guys going to end up, you know, following Pagano to the Colts? It's tough to say. I mean, I really think that they need to look hard at offensive line and linebacker in the first round with the draft, whatever pick that is, 20. Whatever those two positions are, really must needs. I mean, people kind of laughed a little bit when I said Brian McKinney's not a long term answer at left tackle, and said, "Oh, you know, he's going to be great to watch." And he was good for about 2 games, and then he was average for the next 14. So he, you know, he's going to be, you know, another, you know, $3.6 million or something against the cap next year. Is it worth it to get, you know, a guy who's just average out there who can't handle speed rushers on the edge, or do you draft somebody who, you know, might be, you know, give you equal value in terms of his playing ability, would cost less and has the potential to be a lot better going forward? I don't know. That's a tough call because you're having a rookie that protects Blacko's left, you know, blind side. So there's a lot that sort of explore and a lot that they need, and, you know, obviously they need a legitimate, you know, another receiver to sort of make this offense go a little further. And I don't know whether, you know, Frank Mackley Evans is the answer, or thinking that Anquan Boldin with another year of tread off his tires is the answer that's kind of complement Torrey Smith. So there's a lot of questions, and I wish I knew the answers, but I really don't.
So, Kevin, let's shift gears to the Super Bowl. Are you going to be at the Super Bowl for ESPN?
I am not.
Okay. But alas, is there any like just on the field, are there any matchups that you're really looking forward to seeing in this Giants-Patriots game? Obviously, you saw the Patriots up close last week. And is there any part of the Patriots game that you're really looking forward to seeing match up with the Giants?
I'm really interested to see how Brady handles their pass rush because, you know, against some of the sort of physical teams this year, he's not been particularly great. But I really believe that Brady is the best quarterback of this generation. I think that he's going to be extremely motivated, whether he's going to admit it or not, by the fact that he's, you know, didn't play particularly great in that Super Bowl, you know, 7, and they sort of lost a chance at history. And he obviously did not play particularly well against the Ravens, and they sort of got, you know, lucked their way into the Super Bowl. And I really think that he probably got one more great performance in it in a big stage like this, and sort of understands the moment and kind of how he'll be viewed if they were to win this game. So I've seen a lot of people who were sort of saying, oh, I think the Giants are going to win this game, you know, even though they're not favored. Like, they're clearly the tougher team, the stronger team. I just think Brady's going to play really, really well. And I think that, you know, he's going to be able to sort of prove that that he's in his rightful place in history as amongst, you know, on the Mount Rushmore of quarterbacks. I'm very interested to see, you know, how the Patriots secondary handles those Giants wide receivers, because Manningham looks really good right now, and Victor Cruz has obviously been hot. You know, I'm just interested to see how Belichick sort of schemes Eli Manning, you know, how he kind of tries to pressure him and tries to disguise some coverages. And I mean, I love that aspect of football. I love great defensive coordinators trying to outthink great quarterbacks. So that's what makes it compelling.
Yeah, it's certainly a great matchup. You know, I believe you when you say Tom Brady is right up there, Mount Rushmore of quarterbacks. I agree with you. The guy just finds a way almost every single time, you know, except for recently, this last few playoffs. But he's just phenomenal, and you can't argue if he gets the ring this year, 4 rings in this era where you really have no dynasties. It's just something amazing.
Yeah, I mean, he just does it consistently year after year after year. I mean, he had an exceptional season this year. It was sort of totally overshadowed and almost ignored because, you know, Brees and Rodgers had these unworldly seasons. But, you know, Brees, if you look at his numbers, you know, it just was incredible. The kind of yardage that he threw for him, and he, you know, I think he broke Marino's record as well. And, you know, his completion percentage was, you know, 65 something. I mean, he's a quarterback who, if you blitz him, he'll kill you. I mean, he just recognizes where pressure's come from immediately and knows where to go. And, you know, the Ravens have always kind of been able to sort of play some chess match with him and to win a lot of those battles. But you don't see typically 2 weeks in a row where Tom Brady plays poorly very often. And so I just think he's going to, you know, have a good game this game, especially with some people kind of scouting him and thinking that, you know, this is a chance for the Giants to sort of, you know, upset the Patriots and prove that, you know, you can't win without playing good defense. And you can win without having great defense if you have Tom Brady as your quarterback.
And that's what makes this matchup so interesting, the Giants pass rush against the New England offensive line and Tom Brady, is the Giants can rush really without blitzing a lot of the times and get to the quarterback still. So that's, you know, that'll be fascinating to watch, to see how both teams kind of play off the other's strengths. Now, last question for you, Kevin. Super Bowl prediction, Giants or Patriots? Are you going to go with the Pats?
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with the Pats. I just, you know, I know the Giants are sort of the hot team right now, and things are sort of trending. They seem like a sexy pick, but I just think that, you know, you give Belichick 2 weeks to prepare for Eli Manning and give Brady, you know, 2 weeks to sort of study their film. I just think, you know, I'm going to go ahead and go with them because I think when in doubt, you know, pick the best player, team with the best player. I think that, you know, Eli Manning is playing great, but Brady's still the best player on the field.
All right, thank you for coming on the show, Kevin, and best of luck at ESPN.com and ESPN the magazine.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Congratulations, Kevin. Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. Okay, cool.